good morning, everybody, and welcome to Daybreak. Surprise, Jared Hillman's back. How are you, Jared?
Good morning.
Hey, man, I'm happy.
I'm doing well.
I'm happy you're back.
Yeah, you know, it's just been so busy. Like I don't like missing out. I don't like missing out on our adventures, but it's just been crazy busy. Even today I was thinking, oh, I don't know if I could make another one, but I think it'd be weird for Mark to do a podcast by himself.
It wouldn't be the first time that I've done a podcast by myself.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I have had to do that before.
What? I don't even, like, is it just a monologue? Is that what people do?
Like, I guess
so. Just a long 40-minute, right?
A soliloquy, is that what they called it in Shakespeare? Is that the literary term? Like when you just monologue?
I think there has to be like a rhyme to that. Is that what that would mean?
The next Daybreak that I do, I'm going to do like in rhyme and meter if I have to do it by myself.
Yeah. Or in haiku.
Yes.
Hey, last week's show that you had our guest on?
Yeah, the last show.
The last show. That was awesome.
Did you finally listen to it?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, Samuel's a cool dude. You know who he reminded me of a lot was your friend Keenan in a way. Because just had a perspective on people at work, and one of our most listened to episodes, and if people didn't go listen to it, they should search through the episodes and look, was your friend Keenan Flagel?
Keenan Flagel, yeah.
Yep, Flagel. Yeah, the adult learning. He's kind of the adult learning.
Yep.
Facilitator, lead, thought leader. Samuel reminded me a lot of that, and I missed you on that one because I think you could have brought out a couple extra things that we didn't bring out, but I'm looking for more guests like that. I like those kind of like human work psychology type guests. Those are fun conversations for sure.
I think anyone that works, I mean you have to imagine, I would believe that humans are probably the most interesting subject to discuss ever, because we are just such bizarre creatures.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like the whole, you know, one of my we always get questions on books. If somebody wants to keep notes, I'll put it in the show notes. But one of my favorite books kind of on that topic is Predictably Irrational. And it draws a lot on Daniel Kahneman, the Thinking Fast and Slow, but it's about how humans have logical brains, but very rarely actually act in a logical manner. You know,
I think we find ourselves always trying to rationalize the illogical, and we just bury ourselves in thought. You know what? One of my favorite things whenever I'm in a course, like a design course, or I'm doing a project management. I'm working towards getting my project management certification, my PMP. And one of my favorite things about courses that are technical like this, and I've done it in design courses as well and engineering courses, is when people refer to the human. Do you know what I'm talking about? That term where they're always just like, remember, you have to take into consideration where the humans, you know,
yes,
will interact here. And think about how the human, it's like, I always find it so funny how they refer to the human.
Yes.
I maybe it's just me, but
it's the least, it's the least personal term to refer to something that's a very personal, right? Yeah. Like the human instead of people. You know, people will likely react to this differently than you would think. No, the humans like engineers are aliens. They're aliens from another planet.
That's how it feels. It's always like these like type A, very technical, very structured, process driven, savvy people. And that's just how, that's the term they use, right? Because it's just that to them the human is it like an uncontrolled variable that they have to like throw into the mix, right? So it's like, okay, so once you've designed a system and the human interacts with it, you know, it doesn't make them seem so alien.
Well, you know what else is alien, if you think about that, is that they're always starting designing something, creating something, and then they throw the human in the mix. as opposed to starting with, okay, this is the human and let's design around the human. No, we're going to design something. Then we're going to throw the human at it, see what he messes up. And then we're going to hack the design. You're almost working backwards, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be an instance of putting the cart before the horse.
Yes. it wouldn't be the chicken or the egg. It would actually be the cart before the horse.
That's right. Yeah, you have to consider the human before designing a system, which for those of you that weren't part of that conversation, we had discussed how using the term the cart before the horse or the chicken or the egg are actually not the same metaphor, if you will. The cart, because clearly the horse has to come before the cart. That's understood. There is no debate there. Whereas the chicken before the egg, that's the debate. So in this instance, the human has to come into effect before designing a system or a tool or some sort of functionality for them. Whereas a chicken or an egg, it's debatable, you know?
I bought chicken and eggs yesterday at the grocery store, and I actually giggled to myself about which one I was going to put on the conveyor belt first. I don't know. That's a weird side note, but I found myself chuckling to myself like a crazy person at Trader Joe's yesterday, as I debated what I was going to put on the little scanner first.
Are you reading anything right now, Mark? Are you reading any books?
I am. I'm actually reading Daniel Kahneman, Thinking Fast and Slow, because I've read so many other books that drew on him, on his work. I finally got that book, and it's a little bit daunting. It's a long book, but I love it, and I'm reading that one right now. I'm also finishing
it. What's the premise of it?
So the premise of the book is that you know, there are decisions that we make very quickly, based on intuition, memory, skill, previous experience, etc. Sure. And they call that system one. Of the brain. So a lot of psychologists call that system one. So system one makes those quick blanket kind of decisions. That's the thinking fast. Yeah. And then, you know, system two is the more logical. It takes some protracted thought to connect all the dots to do things. And the example they give is, you know, for anybody listening, the example they give right away for system one and system two is they put a picture of a woman who's mad and her mouth is open. And it says, you know, it took you less than a second to realize this is a person. It's a female. She's upset and she's about to say something. Like, you knew all that just by glancing at the picture, all based on those things. So system one is very quickly in play. And then they put up a multiplication problem, 17 times 24. All of a sudden you don't know. Like, it says you may know that it's not 1100 and it's definitely not 12, but you're not sure that it's not 568, right? Yeah. And you have to actually do what was the order of operations and how do I set up this problem? And, you know, boom, boom, boom. And then a few seconds later or a minute later, maybe you have to
bring out BEDMAS
solution, right? Exactly. PEMDAS or BEDMAS or whatever. Yeah, you have to bring out those.
Whatever term you use,
Your order of operations and do with the problem. And that's much more of a system two type thing. And so what they're saying is, you know, system one and system two in your brain are often, you know, at work, and you have to figure out when system one is serving you improperly sometimes. That quick intuitive piece may be wrong because your specific experience isn't wide enough to have covered what you just saw and you misinterpreted data. So like one way that he said that, which was very interesting, was like we have these biases where if I told you, okay, there's this man, he's very meek and quiet. He really likes, you know, he really likes to read. He's a bit introverted. Do you think he's a librarian or do you think he's a farmer? Is that most people, based on that description, would say he's a librarian, right? But they completely ignored statistics. That the fact is that in the United States, there are very, very few male librarians and a whole bunch of male farmers. So statistically itself, the odds that he's a farmer are probably 20 to 1 over him being a librarian. But
that's what I was going to say, was that he was a farmer, because he was a male. And as soon as you said, is he a librarian? I thought, you know, there were a few male librarians.
Yeah. So you actually let System 2 go into effect with the statistical analysis a little bit on your impression. Most people don't. They relate the traits to what they believe the traits of a person are, and then they'll make a decision based on the proximity of that impression and not even weigh into effect like these secondary things out there, like, well, there aren't a lot of male librarians, so he's probably not a librarian, right? So it's this very interesting thing. So yeah, you can have a system serve you wrong because you're overweighting certain criteria that aren't as important.
You know what's interesting about that? And it's because it was a conversation that I just actually had with, I was on some site tours of some schools just on Monday this week. And of course we had to go in, we had to socially distance, we had to wear masks. And so we were talking about this, and we were talking about how masks, you know, the difficulty with masks in an education sense, and then you get into a communication sense, is how much you read lips. People don't realize how much they actually do read lips. And then on top of that, they also infer, you know, tone and messaging from people's facial expressions as well. So you take that mask and you put it on, and with your type, your system one, you wonder how much someone wearing a mask impacts your system one. Because the example you gave is that, you know, you had the woman there standing there with her mouth open in a frustrated manner or something. Well, if she had a mask on, you've just lost a very big tell on how that person actually feels. So you wonder, with everything going on with social distancing, with mask wearing, with more communication happening virtually and remotely, how much are people trying to start using system two, or is system one just being thrown kind of really sideways, you know? And maybe I'm drawing on something that doesn't exist, but.
No, I think you're right. I think there's I think in a world where, you know, they always say that, you know, what, 70% of communication or 80% of communication or whatever is nonverbal, right? It's body language, tone, facial expression, exactly the things you talked about, volume, but it's not actually in the words that we say. So I almost feel like in a world where you are taking some of that away, you almost have to speak in the way that, I would say with writing, it's very hard to communicate tone sometimes, right? But you almost have to think of your speech as written communication sometimes, because what you say
100%
has to be very clear, because you don't have these other ways to communicate with, that you're joking or that something else is happening, right? Like, I wonder how many times people have to add, I'm joking or I'm kidding, or something to a statement where maybe before, because of they smile at the end or because they do something, that they wouldn't have had to do that, right? Yeah. Like that misinterpretation is there. And I wonder what that does to team building, to, you know, like we say in-person meetings maybe are more effective because we get a feel for the person, we're there. It's not this Zoom back and forth. But I wonder how effective that in-person meeting is when you take away, like you said, half of the face versus this, a virtual meeting where you have full facial recognition, but you don't actually have the feel of somebody in the room, right? Like that's
interesting. I've actually been trying to, I've recently had to take over a number of accounts with people that I've never met. And so one of the things I've been trying to do is actually meet them over video conferencing first. Because I thought about that, and I thought, well, they don't know me well enough that if I just meet on site, and we have to mask the entire time. I mean, yeah, if we go to a restaurant or we go to a coffee shop, we can remove our masks according to our restrictions here. But you know, I've been trying to meet them first, where I can really meet them without my physical mask on. I don't want people to think we're talking about a a psychological mask, or, you know, without a physical mask, so they can get a sense of really who I am and how I speak and how I work. And so, yeah, that's really interesting about the systems, because you are right. And does it talk about how, are there different people that rely more on one system than the other? I don't know how far you are through the book, but.
I'm early on in the book. It hasn't really got into that mix yet. If it does, do you know?
You've read the back. You've read the back of the book, and that's.
I'm in part one of the book, so I'm not very far. There are like four different parts, and then a summary piece. So, I'm in the early stages of it. You know, the other book that I read, though, that leaned heavily on this, besides Predictably Irrational, was Blink by Malcolm Gladwell. And, you know, based on that, I think there are, reading some of that book, I would say I think Gladwell would say that there are people who lean more into intuition and people that lean yeah. more into that, he called it thin versus thick slicing. So, can I take a big thick chunk of something and get an idea of it real quick? Or do I have to slice it up into lots of thin little pieces and analyze how those little pieces go together?
Right.
And I think there are people, like when we talk about Kobe before, I would, my guess would be that somebody like you and I probably rely quicker on some of that intuition, because we have a high quick start. We have this high level, like, I want a big picture. I'm going to take an aerial view of this, and we immediately yeah. have some impression of what's going on in the situation based on an aerial, and we may not have the data to support it all yet. So one of the interesting, here's an interesting key to that. So part of what I did read in Thinking Fast or Slow, was that certain things that we think would be slow thinking for others aren't, just based on their experience. So, you know, the chess master who walks past a chessboard and says checkmate in three moves, that was not a slow process for them. Their experience yields, right. their experience over time, this whole, like, the 10,000 hour rule, right? Like, they have spent so much time perfecting that craft that their intuition is not a guess. It's based on years and years of deliberate system two thinking that make it a system one decision, and that it'll likely be correct. Yeah.
So is system one a reflection of the speed at which someone makes a decision, or the method at which they make the decision? Or is one driving, one drives the other?
Well, one's the method, the speed and the methodology are that it was something that became apparent without deep focus or thought. But the things but if we have a unique skill set, if you're a world-class skier and you look down a mountain, you see a line, right? Like, you just do.
Right.
And it's not yep. something you thought through, but 10 years ago, maybe you did have to think through that. Right. But you've just done it so often, so repeatedly, you have so much deep rooted experience in it that now it becomes intuitive to you. So
the maybe system two to you.
Yeah. And I think we all know, like, people like this in our world, right? Like, you probably have somebody on your staff that has done what they've done at an excellent level for 10, 20 years, who just walks in and goes, oh, this is going to be a problem. And you're like, why? And he's like, he can't really explain it yet, but he knows it is. And if you made him sit down and do it, he could logically get to where it was at. And then and show you exactly why it's a problem, but he doesn't have the data set yet, you know? Which is very, you know, for me, that's very interesting. There was a study in that Gladwell mentioned in Blink, where a gambler is given two decks of cards. And really all he has to do is flip over the cards, right? So yep. on the other side of the cards, instead of like an ace of clubs or whatever, it has like a loss or a gain, plus 500, minus 20, plus 10, minus 15, right? So he has these two decks. One deck, as you flip over, the gains are really big and the losses are really low, But if you flipped over the whole deck, you'd have a negative, you would have lost a negative amount of money.
Sure.
The second deck, the gains are really small. The losses are, you know, almost equivalent. But if you flip over the whole deck, you'll actually win more money than if you, than you lost.
Right.
So they start going through. And it said, you know, it, I don't remember the exact numbers, but let's say I remember in general. So let's say, you know, 20 cards into a 52 card deck, the gambler realizes there's a difference between the two decks.
Yeah.
These decks are different. 30 cards in, they can articulate what it is and that one's losing them money and one's gaining them money. Okay. Let's say that's 20 and 30 cards. So
this
then
is
they
card
do
counting 101.
Yep. So then they do a, then they do the test again with a gambler, not different gambler, blah, blah, blah. And they're just testing the autonomic response, hand sweat. Right?
Yeah.
So hand sweat, something you can't control. 5 to 6 cards in, the deck that's losing the person money, their hands start to sweat. So before they've articulated in their brain that there's even a difference between the two decks, the body's reacting different to one deck than the other. And way before they could even articulate what the difference is. So like this intuition in them is already driving something that's happening. Like this is dangerous. This one's safe. Yeah. Before your brain has even calculated that it is different, number one, and number two, exactly what the difference is. So there, I think there is this idea that we have something deep-seated in us that starts to drive like this danger response, like your spider sense, right?
Yeah.
Like you, and you're like,
it's intuition.
And there's something there and it's based on something, but we don't always have a cognitive explanation for it yet. And right. I don't know. I'm a firm believer in it. You know, I'm a zoology guy and a biology guy. Like I think we have all of these fight or flight responses built into us based on years of being chased around by something that wanted to eat us. And, you know, like, like we don't respond anymore to those things wanting to eat us, but there are things in the world that hurt us. And I think we've developed, you know, we've switched our subconscious has switched its attention towards those things. And when we start to feel those, you know, maybe it's time that we step back. And we say, maybe my intuition isn't serving or is serving me right, telling me there's danger, but maybe my first glance at this isn't what it should be. And I do need to make sure that I'm eliminating bias, going out of this quick intuitive response, analyzing the back end of it in a way that protects myself in case I'm missing something, right?
Yeah, it's almost like being afraid of the dark, right? Like your system one tells you that you probably should be afraid of the dark because you have little to no information, interpretation, and you're probably raised in an environment where bad things happen in dark alleys and dark corners. But then your system two is saying, well, really, I'm in the middle of nowhere. The chances that there's anybody out here to hurt me while I'm taking the garbage out to the alley, you know, I feel pretty safe about this. So, and you do that enough times, you wonder what like that does with, I suppose that's a way, you know, you look at the way militaries train or athletes, you know, high performance athletes and even high performance leaders and managers, I mean, or speakers. You know, I think at first, when you are nervous doing something, you probably are using your system too, where, you know, you're trying to rationalize something, maybe you're thinking more about it. And then you do it so many times that it just becomes so natural for you to do it. It's intuitive, you know. It's not maybe built in, but it's like a muscle memory, you know. You just do something so many times, it transfers from being difficult and challenging to natural and smooth.
Yeah, I think there's a ton to that. I think, you know, and I often so I'm at odds myself sometimes just as a manager when I think of employees' strengths and weaknesses, in that I think a lot of times we overvalue resume sometimes, like this person has done X role at X company, and I'm only looking for candidates that have done X role at X company. And we forget to say, well, that skill set exists in these other areas as well. And that's really what I'm looking for, is the skill set, not necessarily the job title, right? Like I need the skill set of someone who can problem solve in the field, who has technical aptitude, who knows, you know, the difference between 120 volts and five, so they don't kill themselves. Like I need these certain things, but does it matter if they actually did it in this environment or if they did it in an adjacent space, right? And so I'm always thinking of like, how do I spread out and look for that skill set across maybe multiple roles where I could bring somebody in? But then where I guess where I'm at odds is, are there some things that intuitively that very specific role experience brings to the table from a speed to decision or from a natural inclination to know what to do next, right? That maybe you're not getting if you go wide. And so, you know, I'm always kind of at odds with that. Is this something that in the, is the learning curve on this, in this very specific situation, something that's 6 months or something that's 20 years, right? Because if it's 20 years, then I need to hire the role. If it's 6 months, then I can hire the skill set, right? Like,
right.
And trying to think of what that is over time. It's definitely interesting. I mean, it's interesting just to think about with people, right? And what I try to do many times when people are having, we were talking about conflict resolution. We've talked about that a lot. Like for me, what I try to do is get people out of that system one mode of intuitive emotional reaction to a situation and say, okay, let's boil this down to its least common denominators. And let's talk about those very objectively and how we get through steps 1 through 3. It kind of puts people into this, you know, problem solving system to logical objective mode where they have to think through the problem, you know, step by step. And I find that
I always like the, I like what you had said earlier too, off the record, obviously, but you know, I like the approach that we've taken on conflict resolution too, where it's like, okay, let's not get into what the individual has done here, but let's all agree that what has happened is not appropriate. You know, what has happened is not our best work, as you kind of said, right? And so it's almost like saying that, like a statement like that at the beginning of like a conflict or at the peak of a conflict, it almost, it's like it toggles a switch and everyone's saying, okay, yeah, no. Regardless of what we all did, we are all not happy with the result. So that's something we all have in common. So now let's attack that. Okay. So we're not happy with the result. How did it actually happen? And that almost kicks into that system too, like you were saying, where it's like, okay, you know, yeah, we don't all feel good about it. And yeah, we got angry and upset and frustrated, but using our system two brain and let's really think about this, you know, let's work together as a team to understand why it happened, regardless of the people, and let's move to, you know, move to correct it. So
I guess, you know, real quick before you move on to the next one on that, you know, for me, one of the things that's very interesting is I think it's easier to do in large companies and harder to do in small companies. Because in large companies, there may be 15 people on a team that authored part of that result, and nobody on the team feels very personally responsible for that event.
You're right.
Even if it happened within the team, right? And even if they do in their, you know, even if they do inside know that maybe it was something they did personally, there is cover because they're part of a 15 person group and they don't feel outed in front of everybody. If we say that this part of the process failed us and this is, you know, so, but when you get in a smaller company, it's really hard sometimes to divorce the role from the name of the person. And like for me, I try to facilitate a conversation where like, let's not use names. Let's use the department that this falls under. Like,
Yeah.
And it is hard if there's only one person in that department or two people in that department, like they still feel somewhat like they need to defend themselves. But I really like, let's take the, when almost like the human, I'll go back to the engineering, like let's take the person's name out of it.
Let's remove the human.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's take the human out of it for a minute so that there's not this personal attachment to the mistake or any type of blame that somebody feels like is being directed at them during this time. And just saying, here we didn't have enough information in engineering. Here we didn't get the right meeting. This, from a sales perspective, we didn't get the right access to the end user. In this case, we didn't get this. Now, how do we fix those things? And then you're not saying, well, Bob and Jenny, you know, really screwed this up. You know, like it's harder to do in a small company because I think we automatically have a face to that department like that. Oh, I know who that is. That's, you know, this person over here. But really stepping it back and trying to do it in that way, you know, helps people not dig in their heels because and being in a place where you say, hey, look, like everybody's busy. We all fail. Like there's freedom to fail here where nobody's at risk of losing their job in this conversation. Like nobody's under threat of human resources reprimand. We're really just trying to make this better the next time, you know?
You know what helps with that? And, and then we'll have to finish up, I guess. But
yeah.
here's something that we probably have never spoken about. If you are a team lead or you are in a management position or a leadership position, and you want to become better at the human side, and I know this from personal experience, read a parenting book. And the reason I say that is I just through my own experience, I had to read a book called, I have a teenager, so I had to read a book, and it's called Ending the Parent Teen Control Battle. And it talks about, I've just brought it up here. The subtitle underneath it is Resolve the Power Struggle and Build Trust, Responsibility, and Respect. But a lot of the book is really about how people, teenagers in this case, they'll always do well if they can. And there's ways to speak to behavior and action rather than individuals. And that's the same mindset that you were just kind of speaking to, where it's like, look, people are really neither good nor bad. It's behavior that's good or bad. It's actions that are good or bad. People are just people, you know? So like you were saying, if you can remove the human out of it and speak specific to the action, the behavior, the result, you know, that's how you can, to me, that's how you can get on board. And I'm not saying that, you know, everyone that has direct reports needs to come in, you know, acting like, you know, me, mom, or fun dad or whatever. But if you read a good parenting book about how to remove that power struggle and have the belief, like educators would do this too, right? Where educators have to be of the mindset that every kid will always do well if they can.
Yeah.
And if they can't, there's a reason. And it's like employees, like to believe that employees or team members or coworkers intentionally, you know, commit bad behavior or are bad people, or it just, there's always more to it, right? So remove the human, talk about the behavior. And I would recommend a parenting book for anyone that's in charge of a team.
Yeah, I've done that with teams before during conflict. I just like, hey, I don't think any of us, you know, I'm like, we know that so-and-so isn't lazy and they're not dumb and they know how to do their job.
Yeah.
And we know neither are you, but somehow this isn't working. So it's not intention. There's not a poor intention here. None of us are desiring a bad result. None of us are incapable of being smart enough to figure this out, right? None of us are acting in a way that's selfish just to create something easier for ourselves. So if none of those things are happening, then there's something else here we can figure out.
Yeah.
You know, we've eliminated the variables of, I don't have the proper information, or not information, but I don't have the proper, capability.
Tools, resources.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever. Right. Like we all have the cognitive ability to figure this out and to make this work right. We're just missing something in the middle. And so we got to figure out what that is. And it might not be anybody's fault. It's just, it could be something in process. It could be something and the order of operations, like we talked about earlier with math, you know, like it could be something in that that we just need to fix so that it stops being a problem. Yeah, I like that a lot. I like the parenting book idea.
And for a future podcast, we could talk about how the world is missing that entire discussion.
Yes, sir.
We no longer have the ability to have the discussion about intention or what drives a behavior or what drives an action and really look at like the root cause of it. We just jump to
bad.
I feel like, did you ever watch Office Space? Have you ever watched Office Space?
We just watched it with my daughter like 2 nights ago. Yes.
it feels like the world is just literally one big jump to conclusion game board now.
Yes.
And that's just, yeah.
The middle jump to conclusions, Matt. Yep.
Yeah. But anyways, cool, man. We're running low on time, but
yeah, no, I know we got to wrap up. You mentioned the teenager thing. I'll end with one thing I read on Twitter, and then we'll sure. give the closing. I saw somebody the other day that said, you know, teenagers know everything, but every time I ask them something, they say, I don't know. Like, why won't they just share it with me? I need to learn. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, awesome. Well, hey, hopefully somebody got something out of this. We didn't have a plan this morning. We knew we hadn't talked in a while, and usually we like to just catch up over a recording of the show, and hopefully we add some value to somebody. But yeah, if you're out there, take a look at the show description. Jared and I mentioned a few books that might help with your person-to-person interactions within your business, and then how you're making better decisions. And hopefully we'll be here next week if Jared doesn't freeze or get lost in Winnipeg.
It's summer weather here almost.
Manitoba, a whole other province. Congratulations, by the way.
Yes, thank you.
All right, everybody. This has been Daybreak. Thank you so much. Mark and Jared signing out, and we'll talk to you next time.